Looking for a good financial advisor in your corner? Guess what? OG's taking clients. OG, is that true? Are you taking clients or is that just a vicious rumor?
It is absolutely true.
What's crazy is it took a lot of rearranging of your schedule, but you too, like I get to every day, can sit across the virtual table with this guy. Head to stackybenjamins.com/OG to schedule an appointment.
But hey, enough of my yakking. What do you say? Let's boogie.
Live from Joe's mom's half-finished basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey there, entrepreneurs and business lovers. Today, I'm taking this hard-earned degree from SBSUTI, you know, Southwest Bahama State University and Technical Institute, and I'm putting it to good use. Today, we welcome Steve Siegel from the new hit entrepreneurship show on the CW, Hatched. And because he's here, I'm going to show him how I've created this innovative and completely new approach to bread. More on that later, but also today, Money has released their best of 2016 list. Fidelity helps you talk to your doctor. We save someone by throwing out the Haven Lifeline. We also answer your letters and still have time for my trivia. Here they are, two guys who I'm sure are going to be begging me for a piece of the action after I show my new invention to Steve Siegel. It's Joe and OG.
I can't wait to see where this goes.
Doug's had a lot of inventions lately and business ideas. I'm not interested in getting in on the ground floor. I'll be interested in getting in when it's like I'm maybe like the third floor.
Yeah. Does Doug's brain even reach the third floor? Hey, everybody. I'm Joe Salci, High Average Joe Money on Twitter. We've got a heck of a show for you today because Steve Siegel's here. That brand new show, Hatch. You know, you take one part Shark Tank, you take another part The Profit, and you kind of mix them together. And there you have this team of people working with entrepreneurs and trying to help them get their idea ready. So Steve Siegel is going to talk to us about two things. About number one, if you're somebody looking at all these new crowdfunding things, we're always approached with these good ideas. And you've had this happen to you, OG. People come to you and they're like, oh, I heard about this great idea. Every idea sounds like a great idea. How do you know if it's really worth investing in? Steve's going to talk about some of his criteria. But then if you're an entrepreneur, like what the keys are to getting your stuff created. So attacking it from both sides. Isn't that cool?
Love it.
You know what else is cool? When you head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, because as we roll into the holiday season, guess what? $450 extra though is nice in your pocket.
Can use more money.
More money.
That's like $225 a piece between you and me in terms of gifts. And we've got at least 6 to 8 listeners.
Think about all the great money we could make if people would just go to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money and send
all of it to us.
Right. Well, I think it's fair actually to send us part of it because we told people about it, right?
It's like a hedge fund.
Yeah. Yeah. We split
like 2 and 20. We charge you 2% and we get 20% of the profit. Seems fair to me.
stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. We'll have to do that on the honor system, OG. Okay. All 6 listeners will have to send us the money on the honor system. Let's throw they in will. Another $100 if you head to stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. That's spelled SOFI. Because as you're looking up your checking account, savings account, your debt products at Magnify Money, you know what you'll find in those debt products? If you need to refinance the student loans, guess what? SoFi is the number one place to do it. Or you need a personal loan, Magnify Money shows SoFi is the number one place for that too. Dan Macklin says it takes very short time. Put in your information. They'll tell you exactly how they can work with you. You can choose from different time frames. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility in the way you can work with SoFi on refinancing the student loan or getting your stuff together. And they'll throw in $100 for each of those. How about that? Once again, 20 for us, 80 for you.
Free money.
It is fantastic. So we've got fantastic guests, Steve Siegel from Hatch, as we mentioned earlier. Great Haven Lifeline we're going to throw out to a listener today. But before that, we got some headlines, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Lots of different publications, OG, listing off their favorite things. of 2016. Of course, Kiplinger had us as their favorite podcast of 2016. Thank you.
Super cool.
To them. That was awesome. Money did the same thing with banks. So we'll link to both of these in the show notes, stackingbenjamins.com. The best checking accounts. It was interesting walking through these because, you know, you can do this all the time at Magnify Money, but I like these once a year looks. It's their favorite credit union, Lake Michigan Credit Union Max Checking. It wins because it has no maintenance fee and an ultra rare yield, 3% on up to $15,000. You never see 3%.
I see a special rate or something.
I see 3%. I get suspicious. Don't you?
Well, that's what I mean. Your initial reaction and mine were the same. What's the catch?
Yeah. You can also use all 43,000 all point ATMs for free. But I think what you're looking for when you're looking for a bank, I mean, aren't those some things you look for? $0 maintenance fee, right? And then free ATM. I don't go to the ATM that much anymore, not like I used to.
They don't dish out singles, so it's really useless. Right. Thursday nights can get really expensive.
If I got to spend the whole 20.
When all they throw out at you is 20s, they don't give you change.
Yeah. But a lot of time, OG, with these bank accounts, you know, you got to read the fine print.
Yeah, fine print's there. That's why we use Magnify Money, not to
talk about our sponsor too much.
Yeah, but it's okay to talk about them too much, I suppose. They're going to help you with that, help you get through that fine print, give you a letter grade, A, B, C, D, whatever. You really need 3% on your checking account? I mean, on 15 grand?
I don't know. It's better than zero, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you're talking about that, but there's got to be a catch to that, right? There's got to be some kind of something.
Best banks for convenience. It says JPMorgan Chase is the one that they list. And best for military. Of course, we worry about that. USAA Federal Savings Bank one. How
USAA,
about that?
Yep.
It says USAA outperforms other military offerings with the mix of benefits, no maintenance fee, and easily waived ATM fees. What's cool is I was actually at a USAA conference when this news broke. And I got to speak with somebody from USA. So let's listen to that. And Brooke Bueno from USAA Bank joins us. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So congratulations on the big win with Money Magazine. I know as we stand here, you guys had just found out why you won. Tell us about why you won.
Well, we were the first in the industry that offered remote deposit capture, which is actually the ability to deposit your check via your mobile phone.
Which a lot of people need because you're out deployed somewhere.
Absolutely, yes. And then not to mention just our car buying service. It brings a lot of value, saves our members lots of money on the cars that they purchase. And then even when they come to buy their house, they could save money with our mortgage program that we offer, Mover's Advantage. Lots of benefits, just not having to move banks every time they change duty stations, and free credit scores too.
How do people get more?
They can go to our mobile app, just download it from the store, either the App Store or on the Google Play Store, and then they could also visit USAA.com as well. Thank you.
How about that? Man on the ground with the microphone.
It's like a live show.
Almost. Congratulations to USAA and to all these people. I think
was this just a banking list, or was there a list of other things?
No, Kiplinger's that we were on was a list of all different stuff, but theirs were just top banks. Let's move on to this Fidelity piece. This comes to us, of course, fidelity.com from their viewpoints section of their website. This article, 5 ways to save money on prescriptions. And we don't talk much about this type of stuff, but prescriptions can get really...
Don't get sick, number one.
that's the best way with a bullet. Do not get sick. Skip chain drugstores. According to Consumer Reports, the big pharmacy chains consistently charge the most for 5 common drugs. Consider shopping at a warehouse store for lower prices.
Yeah, Costco, Sam's Club.
Yeah.
Fantastic, yep.
Hadn't even considered that, actually. I'm the first guy in line at the big chain pharmacy stores. Number 2, support independence. Go local and ask for a lower price. In some cases, your neighborhood pharmacist might have more flexibility to beat competitors' prices. Don't always use your health insurance. Some chain and big box stores offer hundreds of common generics at prices as low as $4 for a 30-day supply. I've had to do that before where I talked to my doctor and I said, you know, is there a generic that does this same thing? And they'll go, oh, yeah, absolutely. So talk to your doctor about your health insurance and what it covers and what it doesn't.
I was going to say, that's the biggest one probably, I think, is making sure that you ask if there's a generic
Yeah, that saves you a ton of money. Ask, quote, is this your lowest price? Your prescription will be processed through your insurance unless you tell them to do otherwise. Ask your pharmacist if any discount programs, cards, or coupons might apply to you.
And Google it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you see those commercials all the time. If you need help paying for your medication, visit .com for valuable money-saving offers.
Number five on here, seek a 90-day prescription for drugs you take long-term or for a chronic health condition. It can be more
drugs I take long-term, all right.
Be more convenient than little blue pills. Is that what you do?
No, you can only take those in 4-hour increments or something. I don't know the particulars, but something about 4 hours is good or 4 hours is bad. I don't know which side of the equation I fall on.
Those are drugs you do long time, not long term. Yeah. For drugs you take long term or for a chronic health condition, it can be more convenient, even cheaper to buy a 3-month supply. You'll pay one copay rather than three. I like that.
I would add another one to that mail order. A little bit better than so that probably kind of folds into the first one.
Yeah.
Checking different places.
I'll link to this because they talk a lot about talking to your doctor in this article too. Good stuff. That'll be on our show notes at stackybenjamins.com. I think that the big takeaways here, OG, number one is when you're looking at prescriptions, you know, I like this idea of don't just go right to the big box pharmacy on the corner, the big chain pharmacy.
Go to the big dude on the corner.
That's right. There might be. Yeah, that won't be sketchy at all. And the woman
I'm looking for something about yay big.
The white. The one with the tinted windows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you just call him by first name or by his street name. And the second lesson, I think, has got to be when you're banking. Look out for those gotchas.
Got to read the fine print.
Entrepreneurship, OG. Remember every time you started a company, just what a great time it is?
Are you being sarcastic or for real?
I'm actually being a little bit of both because it is a pain and difficult and a struggle. But it also is the most fascinating thing. When things go well, you're on cloud, not even cloud 9, you're on cloud 11, right? And when things go bad, it's the worst ever. Like it is all the above. But would you trade it for anything?
No, not in a million years. Nope.
Well, Steve Siegel is here and he works with entrepreneurs. His show Hatched is in its second season over on the CW. And guess what? We've got him on the show today. So let's say hello to our friend Steve Siegel. And Steve Siegel joins us in the basement. Welcome, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's one of my more beautiful settings I've ever been a part of. So thank you for having me down here.
I know you have this wonderful new show Hatched, and who knew on your world tour you'd end up in my mom's basement in Texarkana, Texas.
That's where all great things are hatched from.
Exactly it. Yeah, that might be your first advice for us if we're ever on the show is maybe you shouldn't do business there.
I would say take meetings anywhere else, even a coffee
right,
shop. Just don't bring me there.
Let's talk about you because I'm wondering with your background and with this show, Steve, where were you? Do you remember where you were when you realized that you were never going to be a guy who, quote, worked for the man?
You know, I think it all started with my first day on Wall Street. From day one, I knew that the hours weren't going to be regular, but I was going to learn and get an education I couldn't get anywhere else, you know, and I think it really stemmed from there. And I love understanding what drives. I love understanding what builds a company. And I think to be in that type of business, whether you're advising, you're investing in, or you're starting, you're never going to have a normal life. You know, you're never going to have that normal structure. But at the end of the day, you're going to be able to stand behind something and say, you know, I built this, I did this, you know, and so there's going to be times where you act like the CEO in a startup. There's times that you're the janitor and everything in between. I think like that kind of life and that kind of mindset, you can't fit into an 8-hour day, you know? And so I think if you have that drive, and I had it from day one, I just said, I really want to do something different and meaningful. And so the best place I thought was starting on Wall Street to get that education.
Did that come from parents? I mean, are your parents people that had 9-to-5 jobs or during school, did you see yourself ending up on Wall Street? How did that happen?
So I was always excited about investing early on, you know, and I think for me it was as soon as these things became online, I got an E-Trade account, you know, and as soon as I could check stock quotes daily, I did it online. I think for me, you know, my family didn't work on Wall Street. My dad was a scientist. My mom was a nonprofit executive. So it wasn't like I was following in this long path. And for me, I just got that bug, you know, from early on, just thinking about the markets, thinking about building businesses. It was just something that always drove me. And I was an athlete, too. So I played football at UCLA. I think having that competitive nature of always being an athlete and having that drive, I think translates really well into working on Wall Street and obviously starting a business as well. So for me, it was just that passion from day one that I had. But I couldn't pinpoint that exact moment. But I remember my first day walking into Bear Stearns and I said, this is it. Like, this is the launching pad for me to go. And I didn't know that 12 months later, the bank wouldn't exist anymore. Right. But, you know, outside of that, it was definitely a great place to start.
Was that the end of your time on Wall Street? Was goodbye, Bear Stearns?
I actually moved. I was fortunate enough. J.P. Morgan bought Bear in 2008, and I moved over to J.P. Morgan and continued to work in banking. So I was one of the fortunate people that got to actually move on through the whole financial crisis. But I think being there at the epicenter and seeing all this stuff happen in real time and then kind of looking back on it, I was shocked. You know, I think when you're in it, you're just trying to figure out, you know, what you can do to help and what's going on, if you're going to have a job the next day. And then you kind of look back on it years later and you're like, wow, that was an unbelievable crisis that we were sitting in the epicenter of.
Yeah, that's such a scary time. And you know, what's funny is these people that you have on Hatched, as you know, Steve, they have their own dream. And for them, that dream can become a nightmare if they don't do it right. What are some of the problems you see with entrepreneurs that come and they want to be on the show, but they're not quite ready? There's got to be a few things that you can pinpoint that, you know, are frequent problems that you see.
Yeah, a lot of times it's packaging, it's branding. You know, a lot of times we've seen consumer products where they don't have that one hero product yet. It could be a food company. It could be another retail product where they might launch 20 or 30 products to start with, where it's like, listen, you want to get one or two really great products. You want to hook the consumer on that. And then you can start to kind of build and have bolt-ons and add-ons on top of that. This is one of the things I see with a lot of consumer product driven entrepreneurs is they try to throw everything out there. You know, it's like, let's throw everything in the kitchen sink. Let's go out there and do this and let's see what sticks. And a lot of times it's really difficult to get an identity around a product when you're throwing a bunch of things at consumers for the first time. So that's been a big challenge I've seen for a lot of these consumers. A lot of times too, people are very attached to the name. And a lot of time people don't want to change their name or their tagline or some of the branding because they may be personally invested in it for so long. And, you know, I think what the show does is really educate them is we put them through a retail challenge. So it's not just one expert opinion. They're getting the feedback of a ton of people in real time. And so they can get these stats, whether they get a deal or not, whether they go on our partnership with Home Shopping Network, they're getting actionable feedback where, hey, you know what? 80% of the people didn't identify your product with that name. Now it's something that they can take away, which I think is really, really great about the show.
Where did you guys come up with that concept, Steve? Because that's really what differentiates you from other shows like Shark Tank.
Yeah. So, you know, this is season two of it. And I wasn't on season one, but I know when it aired the first season on the CW, the big thing is, especially being on Saturdays, is it's a very family-friendly audience. It's a very different than kind of prime time during the week. And a lot of this is we want to educate the consumer and we want to educate the entrepreneur where we want to encourage people to be entrepreneurs. And I feel like a lot of times with other shows, it can seem very daunting, very predatory, where if you don't know your numbers, you don't do a deal, you feel like you walked away and you missed your big opportunity.
Yeah.
Here, we want to give people like the ability to aspire and want to build something and give them real feedback. And if they get a great deal with HSN, that's amazing. If they get an angel investment, that's amazing. But either way, they're going to get feedback from going through the retail challenge and they're going to take away, hey, you know, 80% of people think the price point was too high. 90% of people said they would refer it to a friend. 100% of the people love the packaging. Whatever those stats may be, we wanted to go out there and help people. And I think it's less about the deal and it's more about the journey for the entrepreneur and how the product's going to do. And I think that's a big thing that separates us. And I think that's why people really enjoy the show.
Where do the numbers come in, Steve? I've had this idea for a product. You talk about consumer-based products that I can maybe buy in a store. Got this idea. Do I need to put those numbers together first before I go into development just to know that it's out there? Or do I make it and make it cool first and then the buyers will follow and the numbers kind of follow? Is it chicken or egg first?
those are two different trains of thoughts, and they both can work. And I don't think you kind of fit, you know, one particular product or one peg into it. Some products are a lot more costly to develop than others. And so what I always like to say is, I want to get something out there where I can get into the hands of somebody where they can actually start to give me some feedback. And when you go into kind of that beta testing stage, and so I love, especially with computer consumer products, it needs to be very tangible. It needs to be easy for people to touch, to be able to understand. And so I've seen the strategy work out both ways. What I don't want to do is spend a tremendous amount of money on that product from day one and then not think about the end consumer, my distribution partners, my suppliers. There's so many things that go into that pipeline. And obviously, the more you scale, the more you're going to be able to bring those costs down. So what I like to always do is make sure that I have something to show, but I don't want to dig and put all my resources into that, because you might be changing that. If you have a number of SKUs, or if you've backed order, if you've taken inventory risk on a product, you've gone to kind of test in the market, everybody's saying that, hey, it's a great product, but we need to tweak it, then all of a sudden you have all this excess inventory. Right. So I'd love to be able to get something going and then be able to go back and tweak it.
I got 50,000 pet rocks in my basement that I can no longer do anything with.
I can see them over there. But you know what? All good things, they cycle back. So maybe in 10, 20, 30 years, they're going to be popular again.
Yeah, like mom says, someday those jeans are going to come back, and I don't think her jeans are ever coming. But that's a whole different.
Yeah, I don't know.
whole different story, man. But, you know, you talk about distribution, and that's another issue that entrepreneurs have, because they don't know, you know, a lot of times they know the product and they're in love with whatever the product is. Like we saw in season one of the show. I mean, people love the thing that they do, but this distribution thing is a problem. Where do entrepreneurs start there?
You know, I think a great part of what we do on Hatch is people don't come on the show just for investment. They may have had, you know, they may have been running this business for 2 or 3 years, and they may even be break even or profitable. But what they really need is a great distribution partner. And that's not something that the entrepreneur necessarily has, but that's something that could be commoditized by one of our panelists. And so I always think about capital in two ways. There's kind of this financial capital, which is the investment, and then there's the intellectual capital as well. And that might be a host of partnerships. It might be working with suppliers. It might be working with distribution. And so for me, what I always like to look at is, where am I really going to be that value add as an investor? Because I don't want to just write a check. I want to write a check and be able to say, this is exactly where I'm going to plug them into my network, or I want to partner with somebody else on the show and do it because they may be the great distribution or branding and product guy, and I might be the domain expert within the industry, and together we can help this entrepreneur. So I think the great thing about what we're trying to do is we don't have to just give an investment. We can do whatever fits the needs of the entrepreneur.
So, and the key for entrepreneurs, what I'm hearing then, is to search for those people that already have those inroads.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of times what people do is they use a distribution channel, they use a supplier that maybe a family, a friend, a colleague, someone's referred them to. And a lot of times, like, they don't know the differences in all these pricing. And what happens is they start to use someone. And when they could have maybe reached out or partnered with someone who could have had a better understanding and say, listen, you know what, we're giving up too much margin right now. And especially in the beginning, when that burn is so important on the money, every dollar counts. And I think having that right partner can help navigate that, because if you're an entrepreneur, I want that person to build. I want that person to innovate. I want that person to stand behind and talk about the product. Distribution isn't usually a thing that somebody's kind of taught along the way. And so, but it is something that's very easily commoditized with the right partner.
Yeah. I want to turn this around for a minute, because we have a big portion of our audience, Steve, as you know, that has no interest in being an entrepreneur, but they do see investments all the time. And now with some of these new crowdfunding rules out there, they can start getting involved with entrepreneurship. What do you think about those rules, and where do you see some of the potential pitfalls for, you know, just the guy that works a 9-to-5 all day and he wants to put some money behind something exciting?
Sure. I think the biggest thing, you know, obviously you've seen a ton of these crowdfunding sites in general, like, you know, GoFundMe, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, that has unbelievable traffic. But I think with the new equity crowdfunding rules, it gives retail investors an opportunity to invest. And I think more importantly than the actual concept, the entrepreneur, I think the big thing we need to do is make sure we educate people on actual rules and how to invest in it. And so this is something that when I always think about is, it's an amazing way where I think crowdfunding originally started to support someone's idea or a band tour, or be able to do a donation. Now it's actually changing the rules, and you're seeing it innovating in real estate. You're seeing it innovating across a number of different industries. But I think for me, the biggest thing is education, is you need to do your homework more so on the rules. And the good thing is that all these rules are out there now since they've been opened up to retail investors, where it's not just the institutional guys who might have advisors. these people need to make sure that they educate themselves before they go out there and even think about a concept or an idea or an entrepreneur or backing something.
Are there some areas, though, if I'm looking at some crowdfunding thing, and I think the concept sounds really good. You know, I was a financial planner for 16 years, and I worked with investors. And it seemed, as you know, Steve, every deal looks good when you first hear about it, right?
Sure.
Every single deal, the top line looks good. And the, as mom says, the devil's in the details, right?
I mean, absolutely.
That's a line from the 1950s. What are some of those details that I really want to see? Can you mention maybe, are there one or two that should stick out to people that they should make sure they have?
Absolutely. I mean, the way I look at investing in a new startup and business is two things far and above everything else is the entrepreneur, the management team, and the concept. And so it really all starts with the people. You know, I think especially at the seed and the startup and Series A level, the concept could pivot. There could be changes, you know, but is that entrepreneur willing to do it? Do they have the background? Are they flexible? How's the team? You know, and so for me, I like to look at, and it might be difficult sometimes in a kickstarting or an equity crowdfunding type situation where you might not have that opportunity to meet them. But I think doing research on their background, saying, is this the right fit? Does this story make sense? You know, obviously, there's usually a little video, there's a deck, you know, and what I always look for is there a clear roadmap? How are they going to use these, the use of proceeds? Knowing that there could be pivots or changes, but I want to look and say, all right, this person is either a seasoned entrepreneur, or if it's a first-time entrepreneur, they have that background that best fits this industry and this concept that I want to bet on. And so that's what I usually like to look at and say, all right, this story, this team makes sense to me. This is somebody that I want to get behind. And you know what? If it is successful, and let's say 5 or 10 other people try to eat his lunch, he's going to be, or he or she is going to be flexible enough to work with his investors or to understand and build a team around him with advisors and other great people to navigate those waters. And I think that's, you know, when I sit down and talk to people, that's what I look for. You know, I want to look for that drive, that passion, that story, and the flexibility to say, you know what, no matter what's thrown at me, I'm going to be able to figure it out and navigate it.
I had a great mentor tell me that once, Steve, so that really rings true for me, that if you've got the right people, you could run a pizzeria, you could sell dresses. The product almost doesn't matter as much as that team of the right people who can get it done.
I completely agree. And I think it starts from the top too. That's why you see a lot of great CEOs have moved around from different companies, you know, and I always like the example of like, you know, a lot of guys that came out of PayPal, which had an unbelievable group of people. You see Palantir, you see Tesla, you see all these other companies that came out of it. None of them were in payment services where the original company was. But if you get a lot of really great and smart people behind something, they're going to be able to go run some other industry as well in business. So I think you're completely right.
Okay, last question, Steve. And as you know, nobody listens to the show, so your secret's safe with us.
I appreciate it.
Can give us some juice about some of the upcoming stuff that we're going to see on Hatch this season.
So you're going to see some great stuff. I think there's a lot of health and wellness right now, and I think that's kind of the big buzz right now is we're doing things that maybe aren't as traditional as maybe energy drinks. You know, we're going to do something that's actually going to be a nighttime sleeping aid drink. And we're going to do a couple other beverages that focus on a few other types, and I got to leave this a secret, but I don't even know if you can broadcast past the basement here, but if it can, I got to leave it a secret. But there's a couple other things with different types of drinks that you wouldn't even think about putting these ingredients in, and they're turning out to be amazing, amazing products for us. So really interesting what we're doing in the food space. So it's going to be a great season.
I can't wait. And how fun is it working with Nicole Lappin?
Oh, she's great. So, you know, Nicole and I grew up together. We went to high school.
Did you really?
Together. Yes. We've known each other. We've lived on the same block. So I've known Nicole for over 20 years. And so she was actually reached out to me about getting involved in season two after the success of season one. And, you know, I think it's a really amazing experience to be able to do a show with someone that, you know, you're friends with, that you grew up with. And it's, you know, we both went to the same high school, and to have two people coming out of the same high school, you know, on a TV show together, I think is incredible.
Well, I'm glad she vouched for us with her experience in the basement. Apparently that meant it went well when she was here, Steve. So that's good.
She vouched. She said it's a tough place. It's a tough environment to be in, both, you know, physically and obviously with the questions. But she said if you can survive the basement, you can go anywhere.
You can do anything now, Steve. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. And we'll have a link on our show notes, everybody, to Hatch, the television show season 2, on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks a ton, dude.
I appreciate it. Have a great one.
Hey, trivia fans, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and boy, oh boy, I cannot wait to pitch my new device to Steve Siegel right after he gets done talking to Joe's mom. Don't tell anybody, but here's the scoop. I've got these two irons wired together with just a little space between them, right? You flip this switch, which turns them both on, and squeeze a piece of bread between them. Then you turn Joe's mom's egg timer here to about 90 seconds, and bam! In no time, you have this darker bronze color and warm bread. Isn't that wild? Now, I haven't thought of all the possibilities yet, but it isn't crazy to think that you might scrape some butter on top of the bread, or maybe even some honey or peanut butter. The sky's the limit on this thing. The possibilities are almost endless. He's gonna love it. But before I talk to Steve, it's time for me to pitch in here one last time before I'm a wildly crazy, successful entrepreneur and dole out your daily dose of trivia. Here's a good one. How many new patents are filed in the USA every year for awesome inventions like mine? Well, not quite as awesome as mine, but, you know, how many are filed? I'll be back with the answer and probably a big contract from Steve Siegel in just a moment.
I'm so thankful we have two great sponsors for the Stacking Benjamins podcast. Our first one is Magnify Money. They've been a longtime sponsor of our show, as many of you know. And if you head to stackingbenjamins.com/magnify money, like many of you have, you'll know why. And what I love about them is that Nick Clements, the CEO at Magnify Money, tells people that you can use the surfing strategy. You surf down to a 0% interest rate, and then when your interest rate starts to come back up, you surf to a different card. Nick Clements says that's a great strategy, but it also has some pitfalls.
It's painful if you stay around when the promotional period is over, but it's actually really, really easy to move the debt when you're done. So it's more laziness that gets people stuck in the balance transfer than anything else. Banks are betting on laziness.
That's a tagline right there. So whether you're comparing your checking account, savings account, or your credit cards, head to stackingbenjamins.com and surf safely. Don't be lazy. And here's the transition. How about this? First time I heard about SoFi, our other sponsor, was from Nick. Nick, who you just heard from MagnifyMoney.com. And the reason was, he said the SoFi was awesome. So I looked into him, and guess what? Not only were they awesome, they decided to become our sponsor. I asked Dan Macklin how hard the process is when it comes to getting a loan from SoFi.
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information, and then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So it's extremely quick and simple.
Easy process, great people, and Nick at Magnify Money loves them. How great's that? Head to stackingbenjamins.com/SoFi, S-O-F-I, and that'll tell Dan and the team over there at SoFi that we sent you. And if the sponsor ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right?
Hey, trivia fans. Well, imagine my surprise when I found out that my invention isn't as innovative as I'd originally thought. After my awesome pitch to Steve Siegel, he explained to me that there's this crazy thing called a toaster. It's a stupid name. Who knew? Even after I told him there's more than one way to slice the bread darkening and warming problem we have here in this country, and don't get me started on that, he still insisted that I might need to come up with another idea. Well, the good news for you, I can give you your trivia answer because I got time on my hands now. Here was the question. How many patents are filed in the USA every year for inventions? The answer? While there are a few different types of patents, if we just talk about those filed for inventions, which, by the way, are the vast majority, according to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, 589,410 applications were filed, but only 298,407 were actually granted last year. Hey, maybe that'll be the ticket. I'll patent this bread warming and bronzing technique, and then maybe Steve will listen. See ya.
Well, you were in the ballpark.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A couple hundred thousand. It's hard to pick, right? That's an impossible number. How many grains of sand are on the beach? 7.
At least 9. Right. Big thanks to Steve Siegel for coming down to the basement. You know, entrepreneurship, I totally agree with Steve that it is the people in your corner that make the difference. Having the right people totally agree with Emoji. Almost doesn't matter what you're selling. The right team really is the most important step.
Yeah, I agree with that 98% of the time. And sometimes you got to kind of follow your own vision too, right? Even if there's everybody saying, hey, this will never work. Yeah, sometimes you have to say, well, let me try and fail.
Right. But having those people that are go-getters, that are on your team, that are focused to help you get the deal, that's good stuff.
Unique ability. Make sure everybody is working on the thing that they're really good at.
Absolutely. Which is a whole different podcast because I was about to talk about, you know, division of labor is important and the whole EMIT thing. Mm. But hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline, tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency are disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on the things you value most, your family and your time. It's why they've created the only affordable term life insurance policy that you can purchase entirely online without a medical exam. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life now to learn more about life insurance the modern way. That's stackingbenjamins.com/Haven Life. You know, it's interesting when Jerome created Haven, by the way, OG, it was because he was a customer and he was so getting life insurance can be way more difficult than it needs to be. And he's like, I can't understand why nobody's innovated in this space yet.
Isn't that how most things are? You know, we were talking about entrepreneurship earlier, but isn't that how most of it is? You see something that's like just broken. You go, I can do this better. Like there has to be a better way.
Yeah. You're thinking, this is what I want. I want this and nobody's done it. So guess what? I'm going to make it. And that's what Jerome and company did. Hey, today we're throwing out the Haven Lifeline to Sarah. Say hello, Sarah.
Hi guys, I have a mortgage question for you. This is the third time I've tried to record it and I keep stuttering and making funny noises and I'm just going with it now. How much is PMI? I want to buy a house. I don't have a 20% down payment for the sort of house that I would actually want to live in. I could get a USDA loan. They don't charge PMI exactly. Instead, they charge an upfront fee of 2% of the purchase price of the house. Is that a good rate? Is PMI cheaper than that? More expensive than that? I asked a financial planner and he said it was so variable that he couldn't even give me a range, like as a percentage. And if it's 2% of the purchase price, can I think of that as being, say, a 2% higher mortgage? Is that a reasonable way to look at the numbers that I would be by paying PMI getting a 6% rate instead of a 4% rate? I hope you guys have an answer for me. I would really like to be able to do this math and get into a place where I can plant a garden. That's my goal. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Thanks for the question, Sarah. Isn't that awesome dream to have a place where she can plant a garden? I love that.
Until rabbits start eating your garden.
You always got to be the negative Nelly, man.
Negative Nancy.
Until the deer come and they take out the entire
until
garden.
Until the deer come.
Yeah. So what's the answer there, OG? Let's talk PMI for a second. So PMI first, why don't I tackle this
sure.
little piece? So a PMI is mortgage insurance. And when you don't put 20%.
What's mortgage insurance? I have insurance for my house. Is that not the same thing?
It is not, because it actually isn't insurance for you. It's insurance for the bank that you have to buy that says, you know what, if I don't make my payments, I've got this insurance that's going to make sure that I am that I'm covered. So you're actually protecting the bank from you with mortgage insurance if you don't put down a lot of money.
So I'm buying life insurance that somebody else gets to collect on, pretty much.
But it's not life insurance. It's insurance against you paying the...
It's default insurance.
Default insurance, right. Yes. That somebody else gets. It's like...
OG I'm out. Like a dealer. Somebody cuts a check to the old bank.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Right. So Sarah's got these two things she's looking at. Obviously, the best way to go, Sarah, is to find a way to wait until you don't have to pay the PMI. Of course, for a lot of people, that's not an option. That wasn't the question we were asked. So let's
a couple of things. First of all, to avoid PMI, there's other ways other than putting down 20%, right? So you could put down 10% and have a 10% home equity loan and an 80% mortgage. So there's different ways. You can talk to a mortgage broker. They should be able to help you with that.
But banks have been pretty reticent about doing that since the mortgage collapse. I mean, that's the way people used to do it all the time. And you just don't see that anymore like before.
Well, it's worth a shot. But let's answer the question. PMI is typically between 0.5% and 1% of the loan amount per year. So if you borrow $100,000, it could be $1,000 a year. Just gets rolled into your mortgage payment. PMI goes away after a couple of different things. Either, obviously, if you refinance it, it goes away. You know, if you have the opportunity to refinance and do a better mortgage or something like that, it goes away in a predetermined date. Assuming that you pay your mortgage payment on schedule every single month, there's a certain date where the PMI drops off, because by that point in time, you will have paid down the mortgage to a certain amount. And then you can also appeal after a year or two to the bank and say, hey, you know, I bought the house for $100,000. I only put $10,000 down, but now it's worth $150,000.
Because the house appreciated in value.
Because it's appreciated in value. Could I have some of that waived?
Yeah.
They will never do that, but you can ask.
They will. They actually will do that, because I've seen that before. Here's the deal, though. The people I worked with, they had to pay about $350. They had to pay for the appraisal themselves. So they paid for the appraisal. Then they had to prove to the bank that, hey, here's the deal. But there was a cost involved, but they were able to get it waived once they proved that the house had appreciated as much as they said it had.
Yep.
Yeah, good stuff. So the answer is...
So don't do the 2% deal to USDA unless that happens to be a good loan relative to the other components of it as well.
Right.
You know, you got to add all these things up together. The best person for all of this isn't going to be a financial planner. It's going to be a mortgage broker, and not the guy at the bank, but an actual mortgage broker that can shop different rates in different places.
Yeah. And Magnify Money is going that way, Sarah, any day. So a good place to look for loans may, by the time that you're looking, be Magnify Money. You might want to check there too, OG. So good stuff there. Thanks to Sarah for the question. If you've got a question for the Haven Lifeline, send those to stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And see, Sarah recorded it three times. I don't think she need to record it three times. Just let the ums and ahs fly. Who cares? Mm-hmm. The stuttering, we don't care. We stutter all the time. So great job, Sarah. We also get letters, and Doug just brought down the mail. Today's letter comes to us from Dustin. Dustin says, hey, Joe and OG, I've got a couple questions about retirement and down payment savings I'm hoping you can help me with. We're talking about houses a lot today, OG. Mm-hmm. I'm currently saving 50 to 55% of my net income into various savings buckets. Fantastic.
So far, so good.
Yeah, the savings are allocated to my pension, IRA, 457, and house down payment account. My pension account gets a fixed amount. I do not plan to retire with this employer and will be able to roll over my contributions to a traditional IRA when I leave. I've maxed my traditional IRA the past 2 years. I'm also putting about $450 a month toward my 457 plan. The rest of my savings is being allocated to a future house down payment. I have some of this in high yield savings and some in a Betterment account that's split 40-60 between stocks and bonds. My question stems from the fact that in 2017, I may earn enough that I would not be able to fully deduct my traditional IRA contribution. If this were the case, would I be better served contributing what I would have to the IRA to my 457 in order to get the full tax deduction? Also, would it be wise to contribute the money I'm saving for the down payment to the 457? Money go in tax-free, but I could pull the money out once I break ties with my current employer. I know I'd have to pay taxes on this down the road, but I've heard that taxes deferred are taxes saved. Thanks for taking the time to discuss my question. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Oh, gee, there's a lot there, isn't there?
A couple of thoughts. If you're making income now that is going to start putting you over the deductibility limit for a traditional IRA, that means that you're closing in on $70,000 of income, adjusted gross income, okay? Which is a pretty low tax bracket, all things considered. Why would we not be using that money into a Roth IRA?
Yeah, that was actually my very first thought. Was I think that with the 457, money goes in pre-tax. The Roth IRA, you don't get the tax advantage today, but you're building up this nice pot of money that's going to be tax-free when you pull it out. I like the 1-2 punch, OG.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look at just kind of way tax brackets are and what the numbers are right now and maybe what your vision of the future is, yeah, doesn't feel like it probably, but you might be in a low tax bracket right now. and maybe you're in a higher tax bracket later. The whole idea of tax deferral is you can defer income when you're in a high rate to pay it at a low rate. When you defer it at a low rate to turn around and pay it at a high rate, you kind of defeats the purpose of it. So I would be seriously considering the Roth IRA as opposed to the traditional IRA here on out. Second part of your question is, should I take that extra money and put it in my 457 for my house? No chance. No, don't do that either, because this house money needs to be liquid. It needs to be invested safely. You didn't mention how far away the house is, or at least I didn't hear you say how far away this is. But if it's inside of 5 years, I'm fine with it being cash or bonds. Short-term government, easy stuff, right? We don't need any equity exposure. And it needs to be liquid. It needs to be easily accessible. What if you plan on buying the house in 5 years and turns out that you like your job in 5 years and you don't want to quit? And all your house savings are inside your 457 plan and you got to quit your job to go buy a house? That's not going to work. So I would keep the savings plan that you have going right now. Sounds like it's a good plan. I would just take the IRA money, put it in the Roth.
Yeah, good stuff. Hey, if you've got a question for us, send those to me, Joe at StackyBenjamins.com. The Haven Lifeline is, we only have a couple left there. So if you want to get in much quicker, Dustin wrote this to us September 12th. So just to tell you how far backed up we are on letters. But if you want to get on quick, stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. If you'd like to schedule a session with OG, that's stackybenjamins.com/OG. That's going to do it for today, man. I think it's a great episode. We were all over the map today, weren't we?
Just the magazine style you're looking for.
Entrepreneurship, healthcare. We haven't talked about prescriptions, I think, ever in 5 years on the show. So that
we've talked a lot of drugs, but not prescriptions.
I've had episodes that have made me consider drugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
This one.
Coming up on Friday, guess what? Mr. Fincott himself, PT, Philip Taylor, is starting a brand new podcast called Masters of Money. He's joining the roundtable team of Len and Paula on Friday to talk about that. And in our FinTech segment on Friday, this is a good one. We've got our friends from the DIY Fund. The DIY Fund is incredibly interesting FinTech because a lot of the tools that hedge fund managers have available to them and industry insiders have, these are former Wall Street insiders, and they decided to bring it to the masses, OG, so you can get some of the tools that are commonly only found on Wall Street, DIY, in the basement talking FinTech. So big day Friday. I'll see the audience. I'll see if you're everyone listening here on Friday. OG, we'll see you back here on Monday.
Alrighty.
Go stack some Benjamins. Doug, what should we have learned today?
Yeah, thanks for nothing, Joe. Well, kids, what did we learn today? Well, first, maybe you can save some big money on prescriptions by avoiding the big box retail chains. With just a little digging and maybe a discussion with your doctor about substituting in some generic drugs, you might feel better and keep your wallet intact. Also, if you're starting a company, Steve Siegel nailed it. You need the right people behind you. But the big lesson? If you're trying to file a patent on your bread warming and bronzing tool, don't send your only prototype to the government. How are you going to create delicious meals with warmed and bronzed bread before they send it back? If there were only a way to warm and bronze bread without it. Special thanks to Steve Siegel from the television show Hatched for joining us. You'll find this second season of Hatched on the CW Network, and we'll have a link to the Hatched website on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Big thanks to Joe's mom for letting me use her bread and bronzing and warming machine, apparently called a toaster. What a horrible name. Who thought of that? Join us Friday when Joe cranks up his dad's shortwave to talk to some of the top names in personal financial blogging and podcasting about three topics ripped from the current financial publication headlines. This week, Paula Pant from Afford Anything and Len Penzo from LenPenzo.com are joined by special guest Philip Taylor, the creator of the FinCon conference and host of the new hit podcast, Masters of Money. See you then.
Well, now that I'm back from some of my traveling, I actually went and saw a movie.
I'm almost done with my after-school activity here in the fall, and I will be, in fact, I have it in my calendar for next week to actually go to a movie.
Yeah, are you going to go see Hacksaw Ridge? Because that's what we're going to see.
Nah, I don't really like those movies.
The war movies?
Yeah, not a big fan.
You watch war movies all the time.
Nah, not real life ones.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is not Hacksaw Ridge, and this is not the new Star Wars movie. I went to see Boo, a Madea Halloween.
Don't come over here with that damn foolishness. Let something jump up out of this damn box.
What's up, ladies? We're having a Halloween party tonight, so why don't you come on by?
Tiffany, what's going on?
Chill out, Pops. It's cool.
Hey, Madea, I got to go out of town. I was wondering if you can come by and just keep an eye on Tiffany.
No, son, no, I can't come over there. It's Halloween night. You know I like to go nowhere on Halloween.
I'll pay you.
I'm on my way. I'll be there now. How you doing, baby? Good to see you.
I'm glad you're here to help me with her, because there's a party around the corner, and I want to be sure she doesn't try to sneak out.
This is going
to
be so wild.
These children today, you got to drop the hammer on them.
What's the worst that can happen to her? Turn to prostitution, drugs? Hell, how you think I met your mama?
You shouldn't be here.
How do you think I met your mama? Prostitution? Drugs? I'll tell you what's funny is we went to see this with some friends of ours. They had tried to see it the other night, and they couldn't get in because it was sold out. Everybody wanted to see Tyler Perry's Boo, a Madea Halloween. Of course, this is the series where this series has been going forever, hasn't it? Where Tyler Perry dresses up as an older woman, and the jokes ensue. Guess where this movie is on a scale of 1 to 10, OG?
-4.
About -4, which is funny because that's not a reason to go to not go see it. Because if you're stepping in the movie theater to see Boo, a Madea Halloween, where you know Tyler Perry's dressing up as this woman in a wig and they're telling a bunch of jokes and they're all incredibly stupid and they always have been, that's what you're in the theater for. So I went there for it and they delivered it. It was the most incredibly stupid movie. I laughed a lot. I generally groaned most of the time. And we left the theater and I said to my buddy, Rick, I said, this is the best movie I've seen today. And that was, that was the truth. It was the best movie I saw that day. Probably going to be near the bottom of the movies I've seen, but it was funny. It was very dumb. The plot was incredibly predictable, but that's what Madea is, right? So funny stuff. If you want some just completely brain dead humor, go see this movie. So how's that? This is the type of movie, OG. You know how you talk about always watching movies on planes and it's kind of hard to like, you know, follow along, pay attention. You don't have to follow along in this movie. There is no follow along. The plot is barely there. So you can easily strap on some headphones and just, you know, laugh for 2 hours and that's it.
Yeah. I will never watch this movie. So never in a million years. I don't care if it was the last television program. I was on a deserted island and there was a TV and one DVD had electricity for some reason on this deserted island and I could watch it. I wouldn't watch it then.
I would use
the DVD to like as a mirror.
I had just come home all that traveling I did from going to New York and then right out to San Antonio. And I was just happy to be home, happy to be out with friends. And Cheryl goes, yeah, we're going to a movie with Rick and Stella. And I said, great. What are we going to go see? Boo, Madea Halloween. And I just said, yeah, okay. Just because I was happy to be home, you know? But under normal circumstances, I think I'd rather take a hammer to my hand and just hit my hand with a hammer over and over and over. Might be more fun. No, actually, it was fun. It was brain dead fun. All right, that's going to do it. Next, we're going to be doing a lot of movies, though, coming up, man. The new Star Wars movie coming out. The new Harry Potter-ish series, you know, there's no Harry Potter in the movie, but what's that? The New York thing, that's coming out in 2 weeks. Hacksaw Ridge, I'm going to see this week. I get to see that down at the Alamo Drafthouse, which I'm excited about. Those places look awesome. You have Alamo Drafthouse around you.
Never even heard of it.
Oh, really? Oh, fantastic place. Dude, there's one not far from your house. We'll have to go sometime.
Sometime.
Yeah, I think you'll dig it. All right, plus they have beer there.
Huh.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, see you Friday, everybody.